Welcome to the New Yorker Radio Hour. I'm David Remnick.
It's heating up. And recently, the topic of race has entered into campaign news. For a closer look, please welcome our black correspondent, Larry Wilmore. Larry, thank you so much for joining us. Larry? Okay, please welcome our senior black correspondent. Larry Wilmore.
Hey, John. Glad to be here.
Thank you, Larry.
The senior black correspondent on The Daily Show was a role Larry Wilmore was almost born to play. He's got a keen eye finding comedy in white America's difficulty when it talks about race, and somehow always seems to make an ass of itself. Last year, he became host of his own show, The Nightly Show, with Larry Wilmore. So he was a natural choice this year to appear at the White House Correspondents' Dinner, the very last of Obama's presidency. But his remarks there somehow caused a lot of concern among people who thought that in speaking too familiarly to the president, Wilmore had crossed the line. You were the speaker, the comedian, at the last White House Correspondents' Dinner for President Obama.
Speaker slash comedian, yes.
Tough gig. Tough gig. I think you told me before that you had had 80 jokes all set
sure.
to go.
Yeah.
And you had thrown out God knows how many.
Yeah, we started with a lot more. And, you know, you cut down. We ended up with about that much, and then I was editing as it was going along, too.
That's got to be nerve-wracking. And why are you editing? What's happening?
Well, once you realize the temperature of the room.
What was the moment that you did, and what was the temperature?
Oh, when I did the Wolf Blitzer joke. I think it was the Wolf Blitzer joke where I said, okay, I don't know if these people are on my train right now.
So what was the Wolf Blitzer joke?
It was connected to the joke before. So I did a joke about Obama enjoying his last year in office.
Saw you hanging out. With NBA players like Steph Curry, Golden State Warriors. That was cool, yeah. You know, it kind of makes sense, too, because both of you like raining down bombs on people from long distances, right?
And Obama gave it at least a fake laugh
yeah,
on
he
that
went,
one.
Ooh, you know, one of those things, which I didn't see at the time. I saw it later, you know, which is fine, you know. I mean, that's he's supposed to do that. He's such a good sport, right? So the follow-up is, and speaking of drones, how is Wolf Blitzer still on television, you know? It's, you know.
He looked mortified.
Yes.
And pissed.
Yes. It came across as a statement of fact that I was taking a pause from the comedy routine and just stating this, like, this hard, cold opinion, which it wasn't at all.
The most controversial and electrifying moment, without a doubt, was at the end. So walk us through what you did at the end of the speech and the thought process that went into it, and then also Obama's reaction.
Okay, so that was something that I had thought of maybe a month earlier. I just kind of wanted to have a moment where I kind of summed up what his presidency really meant to me. And I've made jokes saying I vote for him because he's black and all that stuff, but there is meaning behind that joke. It's a proud moment that can't fully be expressed in words. Mm-hmm. And one of the manifestations of that feeling is pointing out to people, and it's ironic because I'm the same age as the president, is that in our lifetime, a black man couldn't be a quarterback. You know, people thought, what, a black man lead white people? That's impossible, you know, for a whole host of reasons that everyone agreed on.
And not so long ago.
Yes, that's my point. It happened in my lifetime. This is not something my parents told me. And then to see this man, you know, as I said, to live in your time, Mr. President, where, you know, black man's the leader of the free world. And actually, when I wrote that part down, you know, it was so emotional. I was like crying when I wrote it down, you know, because it meant so much to me. And you know, the last part was just something that came out of a burst of inspiration. I just thought it was something that I just had to express that way.
Words alone do me no justice. So, Mr. President, if I'm going to keep it 100, yo, Barry, you did it, my nigga. Did it.
To me, that was having a private moment in public.
And how did you feel the room reacting?
I had no idea. I had like an out-of-body experience at that point, you know.
And then you walked over to your right,
yes.
And you get a hug from the president of the United
yes.
States, and he says
what to you?
And he kind
of beat his chest, too.
That's right.
That I did, which was an amazing nonverbal response, because the nonverbal response could have been, okay, what did you just say?
When you look back on this presidency, forget policy for
sure.
a moment, foreign policy, domestic policy, the way he has talked about and marshaled his own blackness and race
mm-hmm.
has been an adventure, a very complicated
right.
performance in many ways. How do you, now that it's coming to an end, how do you look back on it? How do you think about it?
Yeah, it's an interesting way to put it, because the first incident was before he was elected, when he had to answer charges about the Reverend Wright and those sort of things. And he gave that, I thought, a very great speech on race and spoke directly about it. And in his first year, the Skip Gates thing was the first time he kind of addressed something, and he had the beer summit.
This is when Henry Louis Gates, the Harvard professor, was caught breaking into his own house.
I know, exactly. But that was kind of an awkward moment. It didn't seem like that was a moment that was truly owned or truly choreographed well. It was just weird. Why are we having a beer summit over this? You know,
right.
It just seemed odd, you know?
It did seem unplanned and unscripted, and there's actually a moment in the press conference where Obama's first asked about Gates' arrest, and I wanted to listen to that with you. I think it's a pretty good example of Obama's off-the-cuff sense of humor.
The guy forgot his keys, jimmied his way to get into the house. There was a report called into the police station that there might be a burglary taking place. So far, so good, right? I mean, if I was trying to jigger into, well, I guess this is my house now, so it probably wouldn't happen. But let's say my old house in Chicago. Here I'd get shot.
That's an amazing hard joke there. And
Press conference.
Yes. And first of all, and the president should know, brothers should never be trying to jimmy or jigger their ways into homes. That right there is a mistake. But what, that was an awful.
Show the key. Show the key.
I'm jiggering right now. Sorry, brother. You should not be jiggering your way into a house. But what an amazing joke about him trying to break into the White House. That's a pretty good joke, actually.
But you've talked about him as a comedian, and you pretty admiringly. What skills does he have, and how much of it derives just from the chair he sits in?
He has an incredible sense of timing. He's very likable. He learned how to pause. Like, comedians used to have accessories on stage, like a drink or a cigar and that type of thing, and that was to allow the audience to laugh. You know, like George Burns would take his puff of a cigar so you would laugh, not because he wanted to smoke a cigar on stage. You know, that's why Groucho had the cigar, right? So Obama uses his smile and his charm as his cigar, if you will, you know, and he's very good at it. He knows how to pause and wait, and the audience gets to think along with him, you know, and gets to enjoy kind of sharing a moment with him. What's interesting, though, is that when he's talking about policy, I don't think it works as well. You know, when
how
he's,
so?
Well, he has a very deliberate approach, especially when he's
hyper
speaking.
Deliberate.
Yes, when he's speaking extemporaneously, and I think that works against him. I think he would be better served if he was more succinct and more direct in some ways.
It's almost like when he's talking, it's like he's talking to be quoted. When I've had the opportunity.
Very lawyerly language.
Well, and when you interview him, when you transcribe an Obama interview, they're full written paragraphs. And it's not just because he's prepped. It's that's the way he is.
Yeah, he's writing his essay as he's talking to you.
and he's self-revising in his head.
Yeah.
Nothing undeliberate pops out.
Yeah, I remember I did a joke a couple of years ago. I was like, Obama just takes too long to talk. I mean, if you just asked him what he had for breakfast, he'd be like, well, breakfast, there was some sort of decorative plate. It's like, I'm hungry. Come on, let's go.
Give me an egg.
Yes, if you ask Bush, it's like eggs. You know, it's just that quick.
Some kind of sausage. You know.
Great. That's all we wanted to know. Thank you, Mr. Bush.
Who's the least funny president you can remember?
One of my time, it had to have been Nixon. I mean, arguably the funniest thing he ever did was he was on Laughing and said, "Sock it to me." You know? But he was like, it was unintentionally funny. Gerald Ford, I know I'm going back so far. Gerald Ford was funny, but he didn't know why he was funny. Jimmy Carter wasn't very funny. Ronald Reagan was very funny.
Why?
He was a performer. He was an actor. He knew how to deliver a joke, you know, and he was charming. Reagan had charm, and charm goes a long way. Reagan was funny on purpose and by accident. He was both. Obama's never unintentionally funny, which is interesting, because many presidents are usually unintentionally funny. I can't remember him being unintentionally funny. I think the only possible thing I can think of was when he tried to bowl that time when he was running for
office.
That
wasn't good.
Yeah, that's the only unintentional funny thing I can think about Obama, but there's not a lot of that, which is kind of weird. You know, you would think there'd be more.
So now you've got a presidential race where you've got Donald Trump,
yes,
the presumptive Republican,
right,
and you've got Hillary Clinton, who's
yes,
close to that,
mm-hmm,
and Bernie Sanders still hanging in there.
Right.
And you've got a show to do every night.
Yes.
And what does that present for you?
Gold. In Trump's case, maybe fool's gold. I don't know.
But in all seriousness, do you think that Trump and Trumpism is
sure,
the outcome of 8 years of Obama? How do you link them together?
Yeah, some of that is that. I mean, presidencies are either a continuation of the previous one or a referendum of the previous one. You know, the Trump presidency is certainly a referendum. I call it the unblackening, mm-hmm, you know, Obama leaving the White House. I mean, because here's a man who spent a lot of his time and resources and capital trying to question the legitimacy of this black man who is the president of the United States, you know. Which I found very insulting. And now he says, make America great again, and a lot of people are following that.
And that phrase means what to you?
It's just very problematic. You know, first of all, it assumes that America is not great, which I don't agree with, you know. But it appeals to this narrative that Obama has ruined the country in some way, that he's taken away the thing that made America special, you know, his time in office. And I find that part very offensive, you know.
But, you know, you've been around, mm-hmm, New York long enough. You kind of go, mm-hmm, back and forth between L.A. and New York. And you,
yeah,
know that
yeah,
Trump in the 80s and 90s, mm-hmm, was kind of a figure on our,
right,
in our egosphere. He,
sure,
was a kind of comic business figure.
Right.
And he was complicit in the comedy almost.
There
was
completely.
There was a sense that he knew just how ridiculous,
right,
he was. And in order to keep his head above water,
yeah,
and his name on buildings, this is the role he played.
Yeah.
How did that get from that point to this point?
God, it's a great question. Who knows? I mean, I call him the leader of the upper crass, is what I say, you know. It's this it's this movement that only wishes to speak directly from the id and handle issues as shallowly as possible. And
he uses political correctness as the way in, that I'm not going to be politically correct. And then he says something.
He uses it as an excuse to insult people, which is not—that's not how you talk about political correctness. I mean, I would agree that sometimes our language can be too careful, but you don't break that down as an excuse to call John McCain a war hero, a loser, because I don't like people that get captured. That's your reason to break down political correctness? It doesn't make sense.
But I got to tell you, when that, yeah, happened, when, mm-hmm, when the John McCain moment happened, this is now months and,
yes,
months ago, I thought to myself, well—
He's
can't
done.
That. Yeah, he's
right.
cooked. And
right.
then there would be another one 2 weeks later,
yeah,
and another one 2 weeks later, and his percentages only grew and,
yeah,
grew and grew, and now he's the nominee.
Amazing. Amazing.
Which tells you what? It tells you that the country is fit. You know, the quick answer to this,
do
for a lot of people, I was watching Rob Reiner.
David, do you understand how fungus works? Do you?
Yes.
I don't. I don't get it. It just keeps growing. I mean, you try to attack it any way you want, and,
yeah,
that fungus just keeps going, right? I don't understand why that happens, you know?
Now, how do you face the prospect of a Hillary Clinton presidency, comedically speaking?
Mm-hmm. Hillary is another person who's funny in spite of herself. You know, I've never seen Hillary funny on purpose, but she's very funny not on purpose. So she offers a lot of comedic material. Of course, she had the first husband possibility, too. I mean, there's so much comedic material on that side. So on both sides, look, I have a lot to look forward to no matter what happens, you know, as a comedian, but in completely different ways.
You talked about how you felt in January 20th, 2009, which is the first inauguration of Barack Obama.
Right.
And for all I know, you were there. I don't know, man.
I was.
Yeah, it's me too.
I was there with my family. Out
with a
cold.
Lot of coats.
Yes,
with a lot of coats.
Exactly.
How are you going to feel January 20th coming up?
Man, that's a good question. I think, wow. I think I'll probably be a little misty, you know. Definitely the end of an era. To see the last black president, you know, go.
Well, this
away,
is it. That's,
you know?
keep it 100. Are you going to see another black president in your lifetime or mine?
I always thought it'll be more like Haley's comment or Alex Haley's comment, if you will. I don't know. You know, I'll be lucky if I see it streaking across the sky again. Who knows? It would be nice, but you know, we'll see. We'll see.
Larry, thank you.
Thank you.
Larry Wilmore, host of The Nightly Show.